are back.
You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington, and it's finally time to mix up the co-host thing. Mike Jr. is not with me today. Today I'm joined by two friends of the show. We have Mike Giletto Sr.
Hello, hello. How's everybody doing?
And we have Dom Consol.
What's going on?
Now, you gentlemen have both been on the show before, and it's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you.
Great to be back.
Yeah, and we actually have some Flyers hockey to talk about. Not just one game in the Czech Republic against the Blackhawks. We have two games, one of which took place in Philadelphia.
Oh, look at that.
It's amazing. So we're going to get into today's show, but before we do that, we are pleased to announce that we have joined up with Sports Talk Philly. And nothing about the show will change. You probably saw our announcement on Twitter. Nothing about the show is going to change. It's just a little bit of a distribution boost for us. They're gonna put us out on their platform, and we're gonna be joined up with their platform, and it's just kind of a good thing for the branding of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect.
Right, now I talked to you guys before we entered this partnership. You know, the You Would Think team had a discussion about it, and Dom, you said that you followed Sports Talk Philly, and I believe you said Flyerdelphia too. Right?
Yes. They have a ton of followers, a ton of content, a ton of responses, and
it's good content too.
Definitely, a lot of good things to read. Even just like the responses from like, you know, just people on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is, just, you know, they have a big fan base, a big group following.
There you go. Well said. So, again, that's not going to change the show at all, but we wanted to inform you guys, the listeners, that in addition to finding us on Twitter at YWT Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, all that stuff, you can also find us on the Sports Talk Philly website, which I believe is just sportstalkphilly.com, or at least at Flyerdelphia on Twitter. We'll be tweeting out our show links and stuff like that. So let's get into the show. Flyers started out 1-0. We talked about that last week. Mike Sr., you and I talked about it a couple of times.
Yes, we did.
And those recordings never made air. But on that show, we also talked about your feelings about the Flyers. What do you think about this season?
Well, I've had the conversation a few times, not just with yourself, with a few friends. And
you have friends?
I've been asking, what? I'm sorry?
You have friends?
I've been asking, what am I looking forward to for the Flyers' upcoming season? And my response was basically that there's no way in the world this season can be a failure. The season will 100% be a success no matter what happens.
Now, what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is if they go, you know, 30-50 and they miss the playoffs and fail miserably, you know, with Vigneault, that the problem is the players. You need a whole bunch of new players.
I'm not going to lie. Alexis Lafreniere would look really good in a Flyers jersey. I don't know if you guys...
I don't know
if you guys follow the QMJHL at all. But he
not the way you do.
No,
not the way you do, but I do know who he is.
He's the consensus number one pick in the 2020 draft. And people said he would have gotten picked over Hughes this year, would have gotten picked over Dahlin last year. Basically, he'd be the first pick in every draft since McDavid. He's that good.
Every first pick since Crosby that's been the next one has not been quite what he's been cracked up to be, so I'm not really all that concerned about that just yet.
That's completely fair.
Continuing my point, if they go the opposite and they do the 50-30 thing and make the playoffs, then obviously that's a successful season.
Right.
So either way, you're going to know where you stand at the end of the season. So that, like I said, it has to be a success.
Now, and we'll get into the exact, you know, definition of that in a minute. But Dom, real quick, what were your thoughts going into this season? What were your expectations for this Flyers team?
I think you hear around that, like, you know, I expect playoffs this year. I agree.
I think that's the bar.
Yes. And especially 3 games into the season, this system, like, it's totally different than what we've seen the last 3 or 4 years.
And it looks fantastic.
Yeah,
so
it does.
Far.
And they're committed. Like you can tell all these players are committed to this system. They just seem committed and happy. And I expect playoffs. I always expect, no matter what sport it is, I always expect, you know, winning a championship or a Stanley Cup, whatever. But, you know, I know they're not, probably not there yet. And we know in hockey, you just have to make it to the playoffs, and you know, anything can happen. But
yeah, the playoffs are such a crapshoot that once you're in, you have a real legitimate chance, and anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting the playoffs. You guys talked about it on the first show. I don't think Pittsburgh's as good as they've been in the last couple years. Washington is scary. Tampa is scary.
Yep. Although Tampa has started really poorly.
But I expect them to be there.
They're going to bounce back,
right,
of course.
Right, right. Obviously, we saw last year that, you know, they were bounced in the first round in four games. But still, they're a scary team.
Getting bounced in the first round in four is probably the biggest reason why they've started slow.
Right.
Yeah, they're definitely tempering themselves a little more.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because
let's be hot at the end.
Right.
Right. They blew themselves out by January, had the President's Trophy clinched by the trade deadline.
Right.
Right.
And kind of put the brakes on.
Yeah.
And as far as the Flyers playoff talk, just, I know we're Flyer fans and we're all flyered up and the season's here and we're 2-0-1 and we're all rah-rah, but this team's had a history of winning 5 in a row, losing 10 in a row.
That's
we don't
true.
Know yet. Again, players versus coach. Let's hit the brakes a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a realist. But there's just something different about this team this year. Especially
in three games, I agree.
Yeah.
For three games, I agree.
Yeah, it's a small sample size, of course, but Dom, I do agree that the players are really buying into AV's system, and they look like they're ready to run through cement walls for AV, and he's been their coach for 2 months.
Now, why do you think that's the case?
I don't know, but
I think I know.
I know where we're going with this, and that's fine, and we'll get into that.
I'm not going to mention names, but when a coach demands you buy in or you're going to be held accountable, you tend to buy in.
Well, sure. And I think that move that he pulled in the preseason where he sent all the Phantoms back a week early and all the vets kind of had to play all the preseason games, which isn't something they're used to. I think that was a little bit of a wake-up call.
Go ahead. Definitely the fact that he said, you know, I don't really care what these vets think they're going to play.
Right. And around the NHL, you see a little bit of sloppy play for the first 2 weeks where guys are still kind of getting their feet under them because they only played 2 or 3 preseason games. And I think that might be some of what you're seeing in Tampa, by the way. Guys are a little sluggish. The first 2 or 3 weeks of the hockey season is pretty sloppy. It's kind of like the first 2 or 3 weeks of the NFL season nowadays. And I think sending all the vets back, or sending all the Phantoms back a week early, all your vets played 4, 5, 6 preseason games. They're just more prepared, and I think AV was trying to jump on that weakness in the first 2 weeks of the NHL schedule because you know you can go up against teams that are a little flat.
Definitely going on for that. Adding on to that, I don't think they look sloppy. I think they look crisp, but at least in the New Jersey game and the game last night, they kind of started off until halfway through the first period, kind of like they just couldn't get things going, but not sloppy.
Right. I think they're really doing a good job of sitting back and surviving the initial onslaught and game planning against what their opponent's doing.
Right.
And AV's system seems adaptable, and it seems as though once you figure out what the opponent's plan is, you can game plan against it. And I feel like they've been doing that to some pretty good success.
The biggest thing I see different in the first three games is the lack of both offensive and defensive turnovers.
Yes.
I haven't seen Voracek, other than maybe an occasion or two, be sloppy with the puck and give it away. And I think that has something to do with how at times they look a little sluggish. I don't think it's sluggish that they're being. It's that they're paying attention to detail first.
It's mindfulness.
There's the don't make the mistake first.
Yeah.
Then get the speed second. Then charge, make the play third. The first thing always is don't make the mistake.
Right. And we are going to talk about Jake when we talk about the Vancouver game too, because he had a little bit of a storyline in the third period there. But go ahead, Dom.
I was just going to say, the whole turnover thing. Couturier had a rough third period last night.
Yep.
He had a couple big turnovers, sloppy play, lazy.
And we'll talk about that when we get into the Vancouver game in a little bit. But we are going to start out with that New Jersey Devils game on Wednesday. Now, again, referencing the podcasts that have been lost to Mike Senior's incapability running technology, we did talk a lot about the Wayne Simmonds thing, and that was a really nice moment. The video package was great on Wednesday night. We cheered him. I was there. We cheered him. And then a little later on in the game, every time he touched the puck, we gave him a little sprinkle of booze. We gave him what he wanted.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, the guy was born to be a Flyer. He played the Flyer way, so to speak. And he had a real nice, real nice forward. Was he here 6 years, 7 years?
It was a long time. He came over in the Mike Richards trade.
Yeah, it was a nice run. It was a real nice run, and he'll be remembered fondly, and he'll be cheered, when he comes in. But he wasn't Bobby Clark.
No, and he did sign with the Devils. He signed with a division rival.
I'm less upset about that than if he did it 3 years ago.
That's fair. When he was good.
On the downside.
Yeah, I'm happy for the guy because he's not worth $5
million. No.
He's done.
Although on a one-year contract, I don't blame him.
If somebody's willing
to offer him $5
million. Oh, I take the money if I'm him. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Well, you don't say, I'll take $3.5 million because that's what I'm worth. You milk this multi-million-dollar organization for every penny they're worth.
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy for him.
But the big story Wednesday night coming out of that game was Carter Hart. Carter Hart played so on last week's show, Mike and I said that Travis Konecny played the best game of his Flyers career in the Czech Republic against the Blackhawks. On Wednesday night, it was Carter Hart's turn. That was the best showing of his career.
He was fantastic, absolutely.
That 5-on-3 save, and we'll talk about this, might be the best save I've ever been in the building for.
It was a fantastic save. I mean, I don't know what you were there for, so it's hard for me to say.
I can't think of too many better full stop.
The thing that made it really, aside from getting across and, getting the glove in position, is a lot of times you'll see a goalie make a save like that, and it's just throw the glove, and the puck goes in the glove.
Right.
He throws the glove, and then actually you see him raise the glove.
Yeah. To try to
I threw the glove and it hit the glove. He actually see him raise to where the puck is going.
No, he had a plan.
Amazing save.
He had a plan.
Yeah, amazing save.
He wasn't just throwing his body in front of it like a Dominic Hasek would have back in the day. He had a plan. Yeah. He came across and he knew exactly where that puck was and where it was going.
He saw it and lifted for it. It was a fantastic
save. And the scary part was that he had like two or three of the not obviously not to that degree, but he had like two or three big saves in that game that were kind of that one-time save, and he had a couple big saves in that game.
Yeah.
He went post-to-post earlier in the game from the opposite side, from left to right, with his pad that was not quite as acrobatic.
Right, but it's up there.
But a huge save, and it was 1-0 at the time as well.
I think without...
And that was on Taylor. Taylor was shaking his head.
And I think that without Carter Hart, and say there's a Brian Elliott, we'd probably lose that game by 3.
Maybe you don't lose it, but
I don't know.
You're
lost it, but certainly would have been one of those 2-2 games in the third period.
Right, you're definitely a little less comfortable. In the building, there was kind of a feeling after that save that the Flyers weren't losing that game. Like, sometimes you just get that feeling that tonight, on this night, this goalie is unbeatable. The Flyers aren't losing this game. And then, they go out and reward the kid. They scored 2 goals, right? Bang, bang, right away to start the third period. Sean Couturier and Kevin Hayes, the two guys who were in the box for the 5-on-3. And within the first minute of the third period, bang, bang, Flyers are up 3-0. And a lot of times, you kind of hit the you hit the coast button. You hit the cruise control at 3-0. But they didn't. They stayed on it. They stayed pushing. They stayed aggressive. And Travis Konecny scored a nice one to make it 4-0 later on.
Right.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while under this coach before they're ever comfortable enough to hit cruise control. That'll maybe halfway through the season if they're 12, 13, 15 games under over 500.
I hope they never get there.
Then maybe you'll see them take 5 minutes off.
And going back to what you just said, I mean, that's probably my favorite part of the season so far was that, you know, it's not cruise control. It's you know, they scored.
Push.
Exactly. They scored late in the game. And, you know, the last couple of years, we've seen that just cruise control. Like, I feel like if Haxlow was here still, it'd be a 3-2 game up in the third period. And, you know, you just like to see that kind of stuff.
Right. We're up 2-0. Let's protect the lead. No, this coach is definitely, you play the same way up 2-0 as you do down 2-0.
Right. Yeah. The team has definitely shifted from playing not to lose to playing to win.
Right.
And there's,
I think going forward, I'm anxious to see them have that 1 or 2 goal lead in the last, which they did against Chicago, in the last minute or two of the game.
And how they clamp down lead, on
I'm
it.
Anxious to see them protect that.
Yeah, how they clamp down on it's going to be interesting.
Because they've been notorious the last 3 or 4 years for giving up goals with 30 seconds left, 40 seconds, 10 seconds. It just happened over. Well, it's going to happen sometime.
Yeah.
But it just happened at much too high a frequency rate.
It certainly seemed that way. And also that...
Oh, it did.
Right. In addition to just Carter Hart, I do want to talk about that penalty kill as a whole. Because those penalty kill units, those three guys who are out there for that full 2-minute 5-on-3, did a great job. Scott Laughton did a good job. I noticed Michael Raffel on that. Matt Niskanen had a good penalty kill.
Niskanen's been a really good pickup.
Niskanen has been sneaky, really, really good. And he was always a good player, had a down year, Flyers snapped him up, and if he bounces back, he's a very good player.
Look, well, the bar that he's going to be set against, you know, is going to be so low that he looks even better.
But when you're is it all that low?
When you're placing the M&M brothers, you look good.
Yeah. But if you think about it, you know, you traded him for Radko Gudas. And I know not everybody likes Radko Gudas, but last year, on a consistency basis, he was probably the Flyers' third best defenseman.
Which is why they didn't make the playoffs.
That's fair. But, you know, Provorov had some down moments. Ghost had a little bit of a down season. You know,
Ghost. Mr. 0 points so far, Ghost.
Well, James Van Riemsdyk also has 0 points.
Does Voracek.
It's a 3-game sample size.
I understand, but 0 points for Voracek and 1 point for Giroux is seriously troubling. I know it's a small sample, but that's trouble. But I'd rather see them play the way they're playing to, you know.
Right, well.
Do the system first, points second.
Exactly. Think about who have scored your goals. The depth scoring has been there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I definitely feel like Giroux always kind of starts off slow, too.
Yeah, he either starts out supremely hot.
1 point, 3 games is especially slow.
Hey, I hear you.
Sure. But it's also 3 games. It's not a huge sample. And the fact that your team is 2-0-1, you don't really care. Because you know...
No, there's no panic. There's no panic button to hit.
Right. And the primary scoring will get there. Like, you...
Again, no reason to panic.
Right. Sean Couturier.
Right. That line.
Claude Giroux. Jake Voracek. James Van Riems. These guys will score. They're going to get their, you know...
They always have, so you figure they will again.
Right. They're going to get their 70, 80, 90 points. Claude might flirt with 100 like he's done recently. Jake might have 85. They're going to get their points. I'm not worried about that. The fact that you found a way to win 3 games...
Connect, he's going to have 160.
I agree.
You.
But the fact that you found a way to win... You've gotten 5 of your first 6 points...
Yep.
With 1 point from Giroux, with no points from Voracek, with no points from Gostisbehere... That's a good sign for the depth of the team.
Absolutely.
And I think moving forward, you know, we see it every year in the playoffs. Depth scoring is what wins you playoff series.
Their third line can be, against other teams' third lines, can be really, really good.
Yep. The fact that James Van Riemsdyk is on your third line is phenomenal.
And the third line center, you got to like that as well.
Yeah, and when Nolan comes back,
he's coming back shortly.
Right. We're talking about Nolan Patrick. We talked about his migraine issue on last week's show. He has traveled with the team to Western Canada and participated.
He's on the ice.
Right. He participated in Saturday's morning skate, although I believe he was wearing a no contact jersey. So he appears to be on his way back. They wouldn't have brought him to Western Canada if they didn't think there was a chance he was at least
somewhere along the line.
Right. Or at least heavily practicing. So, and there is also the possibility that he goes down to Lehigh Valley for a game or two on a conditioning stint, just to kind of get his legs under him, because he didn't really play much preseason. So that does bring us along past Wednesday night. Carter Hart got his first career shutout in that game. And the place went bananas, by the way, during the 5-on-3 penalty kill. After he made the save on Taylor Hall, it started building. After that, every save, every clear, every poke check, the building just got louder and louder and louder. It was insane.
Wasn't as loud in the building as it sounded on TV?
It's the loudest I've heard that building in a regular season game ever.
I was going to say, I was not at the game, but I did watch on TV, and it seemed like a playoff game. Like, it just seemed like that place was going nuts.
Yes. In the building, in the arena, it was almost playoff atmosphere.
Right.
Now, I've seen that building louder. I was at Game 5 in 2010 against the Canadiens when we went to the Cup. I was at Game 6 when we tied the Boston Series 3-3 coming back from 3-0.
Okay.
But in terms of regular season games, that's the loudest I've seen that building maybe ever, at minimum in a very long time.
Well, a piece of information is a side note. I played cards. As you know, I play a little poker. I was playing cards with someone who was, he said, intimately involved in some of the reconstruction or some of the work that they did.
Okay.
On the arena. And there wasn't a single decision that was made, because one of the criticisms about the arena compared to the Spectrum, it wasn't as loud.
Okay.
And they said there wasn't a thing that they did in the reconstruction that didn't have that as an eye to increase the level.
Really? Crowd volume was a factor.
Correct. Absolutely a factor in everything they did, from whatever seats went in. Acoustics were a huge part of every decision they made.
I like that. I dig that because there are some, vaunted buildings, right? TD Garden in a Game 7. Nashville's arena has gotten a lot of love over the last couple of years. There are some buildings where you're like, wow, that place is loud. And the Spectrum was one of those places. And the Wells Fargo.
It really was. And it's not just fond remembrance. The place was, the place rocked.
Right. It was also a tin can. Let's be real.
Yeah. You felt like at some points, and in 67 it actually did, you felt like the roof was going to come off.
Right.
Well, that roof came in, not off. But
either way. So regardless, it's interesting to know that Comcast, management, ownership, is looking at that as a goal. And it's nice to see, because Philadelphia, and we see it a little bit in their current ad campaign, the Fly or Die, they're really trying to emphasize that Philadelphia is a hardcore hockey fandom city. And that's interesting.
They wanted to get back to that Flyer fan, because one of the criticisms over the last 15, 20 years with that building is it went corporate. The fans are out drinking beer at wherever and they're not watching the game. It's not as loud. It's a little sterile. They really wanted to try to do things. That the Rage Room now is there. They want to get back to, we're the Flyers. Broad Street Bullies, not that that's a part of the game anymore, but just tough, hard-nosed hockey.
Well, and another part of that,
to the fan that way.
Right. Well, and another part of that came down from ownership or management is the new standing room section. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
There's a standing room section.
It's $25 to get in.
It's $25 a ticket. It's the cheapest ticket in the entire NHL.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And it's a phenomenal idea. And you see it a lot in European hockey. They talked about it when the Flyers were over there. In Europe, they'll clear out a section like behind the glass, like right down on the floor, and at the standing room section. And I think when the next wave of arenas starts to pop up in the NHL, I think you'll see something like that. But
yeah, look, if you can fit four people in where you would only fit one person in with a chair, you're arguably still making more money that way. But I don't think that's what it's about.
No, I think it's about trying to create an atmosphere. And
yeah. Get the zany guy in for $25.
Right. How packed is that section going to be during the playoffs?
Right.
You're going to have 85 people, and the fire marshal is going to be there, counting specific heads. to make sure that they're still in limits. But
correct.
It looks like
did you hear about the Rage Room? I'm sorry, Dom.
I said it looks like a little club, like a nice upscale bar.
Yeah, like I want to go hang out there. Not even watch a Flyers game. I just want to like go grab a drink there.
Right.
It's like Xfinity within the arena.
Right. And I think that's the plan, is creating an environment where you can hang out. And it's not just, hey, let's sit in this tightly packed row of seats, elbow to elbow with a 300-pound guy from South Philly. And you can actually relax and hang out and watch the game. But in this situation, you can like literally just turn and watch the game, and you're not worried about it on TV.
Right.
But
that's cool.
I don't know how we got sidetracked here, but regardless.
Well, since we're already here, what do you think about the Rage Room?
It's gimmicky. It'll be gone by the end of the year. I don't really see it being.
It's expensive too.
It costs $35.
Yeah, that's expensive.
Right. It's not like you can pay $10 and go smash some stuff. Like $35 is like a significant
on
amount
top
of money.
Do you get for $35?
But even if you got a while, you're going in, you're spending $35, then you're spending $11-$12 on a beer, then you're spending $9 on a hot dog, on top of, you know, a ticket price and parking and, you know, I don't know.
I didn't know it was that expensive. It's in theory,
right.
Love it.
Right. Well, and think about it. If they give you 5 minutes, how much is your enjoyment going to last beyond that? Like, if they gave you 25 minutes, you would jump around bashing stuff for...
Well, I'd rather pay $5 for 30 seconds.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't matter how long they give you, because even if they give you a half hour, you jump around breaking stuff for 5 minutes, and then you stand there and go, oh, I guess I'm done. Like, I guess I'm just kind of...
Yeah, you're all raged out at that point.
Right, like how much time do you really need?
Yeah, charge me less and give me less time. I agree.
So, anyway, Flyers won. They are undefeated at home and in home games, because this year those are different for some reason.
2-0, they're home as a home team.
Right.
Although I don't think the Chicago game counted as a home game.
It did. We only have 40 home games.
The home team, but I think it counted as a road game for both teams on the
schedule. I saw somebody mention.
No, we lost a home game.
Did we?
Yep.
I saw somebody mention on Twitter, I can't take credit for it, but has any NHL team ever started off their first three games in three different countries?
I'm not sure, but I do know that the Flyers are traveling 13,000 miles in like 10 days.
Unless game four is in Mexico.
Right. But it's absurd.
That has to be a first. Has to be a first.
Well, and I'm not sure if you guys listened to our show last week. I know, Senior, you said you haven't gotten there yet. So while we came home for one game and then went to Western Canada.
Right.
Mike Senior, do you know how many games the Chicago Blackhawks have at home in the next month? Because they also traveled from Europe, right?
Right.
Their next seven contests are in Chicago.
Wow.
They get to sit home for 3 weeks while we were home for 4 days, and now we're in Western Canada.
Yeah, that's a rough trip. Starting off in Europe.
The NHL's
for one
the NHL's
going
against
out
us.
West. That's rough.
The NHL's against us. Illuminati confirmed. So speaking of Western Canada, the Flyers traveled out there and played the Vancouver Canucks last night. Now, full disclosure, I was at Pennhurst Asylum doing the Pennhurst Asylum haunted house
thing. They finally locked you up?
Listen, I'm back. the room I'm in isn't padded. It looks like it, but, you know, it's
Dom,
not.
Dom, seriously, how did they not keep him?
Okay. Regardless, I ended up missing almost all of that game. I listened to basically the second half of the game on my way home. But how did the boys look?
I thought they looked really, really good. I mean, they outshot them by maybe 10 shots or so. They carried the play majority of the way. Carter Hart's save percentage was still close to .920. We got the goal to tie the game in the third to get the point. You know, it was certainly a game they could have won.
I think just like the New Jersey game, the first couple minutes of the game, the first 5, 6, 7 minutes of the game, they kind of, not started off sloppy, but you know,
passive.
Just right. And then as the game went on, I you know, obviously we'll go through it a little more, but the Konechny pass on the Lindblom goal was unbelievable. And,
it was. I've seen that highlight.
And Matt Niskanen played awesome last night.
Yeah, like
he absolutely did.
Like Mike Senior said, he's proving to be a sneaky good pickup.
Yeah,
he really is. Also, and as far as the sloppiness in the beginning, Dom, I think not that I'm totally disagreeing with you as far as how it looks, but again, I think it's a lot of that is not that they're intentionally sloppy. They're intentionally paying attention to detail to not start the game down to nothing.
So would would you call it more of a patience?
Yeah, and a build up. Not let's go out there run around like chickens without our heads cut off for 5 minutes and have no energy left for the rest of the game. They're pay attention to detail. Don't give up any opportunities. Let's get into the game. Everybody get their legs. Let's get our win. Let's build up a sweat. You know, and build a crescendo and play harder and harder and harder as the game goes on.
Yeah, I definitely think I agree with you there because you know it's been two straight games like that. I mean, you know, and it's the first 5 minutes of the game. It's not the whole first period.
Right. Yeah.
Right, and even in the Devils game, which is obviously the only thing I can speak to here, they were never in a bad spot. Like they might have started a little slow, a little patient, almost borderline sloppy, but they were never in danger.
I think that's the right word.
Never panic mode, which you would see quite frequently the last 3 or 4 years. And again, it's a very small sample size. We have to you know kind of preface that.
Yeah, we're taking it all with a grain of salt for sure.
Right. But so far, very limited, if any, periods that last you know more than a shift where somebody looks panicked.
Yeah, I think Kyle said it perfect. Patient is the right word.
Well, and that's a good thing because we've either started really well, score 3 goals in the first 8 minutes, and then sit on the lead, or play really poorly, get down 3 goals, and then scramble the rest of the game. So it's nice to see a team kind of starting on a more level front and kind of...
Right, they're playing a more even-keeled game.
Right, and one thing I've noticed, again, from the two games I've seen, is that they're also much, much closer to playing a full 60 minutes.
Oh, definitely.
There was a problem there for a long time where the Flyers would play two good periods, and you would cross your fingers and hope that the one bad period wasn't bad enough to cost you the game.
Yep. Or they would do it for not only periods at a time, they'd do it for games at a time, where they would you know play spectacular for 4 games and win all 4, and then they'd go in the toilet for 4 games where they couldn't buy a win.
Yeah, I watched the Flyers play a lot of games where they played really, really poorly for 58 minutes and still somehow won 3-2.
Yeah.
But
it's not that's not a recipe for long-term success.
No, definitely not. And I feel like at least the team AV... The culture that AV has created certainly seems to be a little more even-keeled, and that's probably more sustainable in the long run. It's probably more sustainable in a playoff atmosphere.
If I could put in, you know, put it the best way I could explain it, what I see so far is the fight in the player in the moment.
Right.
Whether it's a puck on the board, whether it's a chase down. There's just so much more fight in the player in the moment. Well, that's what I see so far.
Well, listen, we all know that hungry dogs run faster.
Absolutely.
The Flyers ended up losing in a shootout to the Vancouver Canucks last night.
Boo. I hate the shootout. I'm booing the shootout, not the loss.
Oh, no. The shootout's awful. If you're going to do a shootout, that's fine, but I would much rather
But go ahead.
I would much rather a 10-minute 5-on-5.
Exactly.
So many...
What percentage of games would you say end during that 5-on-5, during the 3-on-3, the 5 minutes?
A pretty decent percentage, honestly. Shootouts are way down. Right? Yeah. I would say it's probably over half.
Yeah, so if you do it for 10 minutes, you know how the least number you're going to decrease the number of shootouts by if you just increase that by 5 minutes?
Right, exactly. And that's why I said the shootout is fine. It's better than a tie. But I want the 10 minutes of 3-on-3 because I think that would limit the number of shootouts to less than 20 a year across the league.
Agreed.
And
agreed.
I think that's just good for the game. I think that's just... It's more hockey. The shootout isn't hockey.
I would make one more crazy change to the 3-on-3. I would make one more change where if you have the puck in the offensive zone, you're not allowed to pass it out of the offensive zone.
no. See, I like the strategy.
I hate the drop back. I can't stand the drop back. Hold the puck for 30 seconds, especially since it's only 5 minutes.
Right.
But you kill half of it just holding the puck and wait in and go back, drop it to the goalie.
So would you really
drop? Yeah, would you really? Drives me nuts.
Would you really prefer a stoppage in play and a faceoff? Because that's what you're not allowed to drop it back.
I
guess
I think that
mean.
Totally through. It just irritates my soul when they drop the puck out of the offensive zone right. Back to the goal. Well, it drives me nuts.
The 3-on-3 has become such a possession game, and it's all about having possession, getting fresh bodies on while you have possession.
In soccer, they go backwards in soccer.
No, I understand.
I don't need any soccer remembrances while I'm watching a hockey game.
I get that, but at the same time, like you said, a large percentage still end in overtime. They still end in that 5-minute stretch, even with...
If you go to 10 minutes, I would hate it a lot less.
Right. Teams might be a little more passive and might drop it back even more in the 10-minute overtime.
Then we go 20 minutes.
Just play till somebody dies. It's fine.
Exactly. I'm all fine. And get rid of the point for the loss.
Right. Well, and
you lose, you lose.
And the ridiculous thing, by the way, is the fact that they don't do it in the playoffs.
Right.
They acknowledge that it's garbage.
Not a good way to end the game. Yeah.
Right. They acknowledge that it's not a good way to determine a winner. Because in the playoffs, they're like, no, just keep playing regular hockey. It's like, well, that's kind of all we want.
I know it's a hockey podcast, but imagine how much you might enjoy soccer just slightly more if you had like a 75-hour overtime where the guys look like they're about to die on the field.
I would respect it.
Exactly.
And they even go to penalty kicks, and that's the same skills competition as a shootout.
Exactly. It's awful.
Except the goalies wear less padding, and the net is 5 times larger.
Right. Yeah, forget soccer.
Right. Regardless, Flyers lost in the shootout. Again, I listened to the whole third period, all of overtime, the whole shootout, and a little bit of the second period. And overall, it sounded like they played pretty well, but I know that not everybody had the best night.
Correct.
Mike, you wanted to talk about Claude.
Again, small sample size, but there's some early warning signs there. I don't know if he's... I don't want to say butting heads with Vigneault at this point. Again, it's way too early to say that. And I'm hoping it's just that he's doing all the things that Vigneault wants him to do. And when he figures out how to do that and be Giroux at the same time, then things will start to happen.
Well, and you also...
But I like the fact that he's not taking huge risks and huge gambles, and he's not, being real loosey-goosey with the puck. I like that. But some of that loosey-goosiness is what led to some of his points.
Right.
You make 4 crazy passes, 3 end up going the other way, but 1 makes it through, and it's his point.
Yeah, there was that pass, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, where it was like a between-the-legs saucer pass from the neutral zone, and it landed...
It might have been a backhand, too.
It was.
An insane pass.
And it landed right on, like, Konechny's tape, and he roofed it. You know exactly the one I'm talking about.
Yep, absolutely.
So I agree with that on some level. But do you think any part of this is also the fact that he's dealing with fatherhood for the first time? You know, he's probably out of his rhythm. He's probably not getting a full night's sleep before games. Do you think there's any merit to that?
I would say yes if he passed the bowling ball.
Okay.
But.
Well, yeah, but it does, it does alter your routine. And we know that professional athletes are creatures of habit. And his... his routine has changed. Like it or not, it factually has.
I don't think I like him on the power play. I think I like him better on his offhand.
I hate him on the right side.
Yeah.
I talked about this a little bit with Mike last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. But putting him on the right side, it takes away the shot.
Right.
Now, you still have him open to the whole zone, and you let him be that creative passer that he can be, and that's great, and it's fantastic that your power play has that dynamic to it. But at the same time, you take away the shot, and also putting him on the right wall puts Voracek on the left wall on his strong side.
Right.
So it takes away the one-timer from both of them.
Right.
And I agree, I don't like it at all.
Well, you know what the other way looks like. You know what its success rate is because you've had it for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You know what it can accomplish, and you know what you're going to get from it. Obviously, Vigneault doesn't think that's enough, so he's going to try something different and see how this goes, see if it works, have some other option to go to. You can always go back. And you see what happens.
And for what it's worth, obviously small sample size, and I know that the second unit scored one last night, the Flyers do have a 40% power play conversion at this point.
Right. Right, and ultimately it's a result-oriented business, and all results is all that should matter.
Right, obviously three games, they've had, you know, six or seven power play opportunities. It hasn't been a ton of them.
I think they've got four power play goals in three games.
Right, it's worked.
I think that's what the number is. So they're like 4-for-10.
Right, it's worked several times, and that's all you can do with what we've got, you know?
And I think last night, when they scored on the power play, Vancouver was 12-for-12 in the season, or 11-for-11, something like that. And
they were 12-for-12, and we scored the first power play goal against them.
Right.
So, you know, maybe this comes around. Maybe we're just wrong. Maybe we're looking at it.
I was saying, maybe it doesn't need to come around at 40%. Right. Maybe it's around.
Maybe we just don't know hockey as well as Alain Vigneault does.
Could that be?
Oh, that's certainly a possibility.
I don't know about that.
I don't know if I can concede that point, right. But I got to concede it's a possibility.
Listen, I know Dom definitely knows more about hockey than Alain Vigneault. That's why his fantasy team is, you know, as good as it is. Dustin Byfuglien and Evgeny Malkin. Dom's having a rough year.
Don't even get me started about football. I drafted Andrew Luck the day he retired.
Look, all I'm saying is if Andrew Luck was a hockey player, he'd be playing. That's all I'm saying.
You're probably right.
That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, we're not going
to
get into that.
I just had to throw it out there.
No, it's a hockey player. Oh, it's a hockey reference.
And I had to throw out the whole Andrew Luck because, you know, you bust my chops about that. So.
And I think rightfully so. But either way, I just touched on it there. But Evgeny Malkin is out 6 to 10 weeks.
Let me cry for a second. Hold on.
Listen, I'm not asking for sympathy. No. But is that the death blow in the Penguins? Like, I know I talked about it on our first episode back from our hiatus. I don't have the Penguins in the playoffs this year. And that was before you lose, you know, a top five center in the game for 2 months.
I don't know that they're not going to make the playoffs, but
right, it's tough to death blow.
I don't know that they're. I don't know that they're not going to make the playoffs, but I mean, because you still have Crosby and they've that team. I mean, I know a couple guys left, but that team won two straight cups. I don't think they're dead yet. I don't know if they make the playoffs. I don't know if they don't make the playoffs. I wouldn't count them out yet. Even with the injury, I wouldn't count them out yet.
I think ringing the death bell for a team in 6 weeks is a bit that's short.
Well, say that.
Look where St. Louis was in January.
You say that, but there's a Bob McKenzie stat that he puts out every year, and it's teams that are in a playoff position on American Thanksgiving, that last Thursday in November. Teams that are in a playoff position at that point make the playoffs like 85% of the time. And then
how did that work last year?
That's why it's 85%, not 100%. But
understood.
I'm just saying it's a huge, huge indicator. You can't make the playoffs in the first month of the season, obviously. But
you can fail to make it. Yeah, you know, you're exactly 100% right. So I jumped the gun on you, but yeah, no, you're 100% right.
Teams outside of the playoffs on American Thanksgiving, which is only 5 or 6 weeks away, have a very low chance of actually making the playoffs at that point. That's why the St. Louis Blues story last year was so insane, because not only was it Thanksgiving, it was a month and a half after Thanksgiving that they were in last place. That's why it's a ridiculous story.
Right, but not just out of playoff position, but last place.
Right, but not even that. I'm just talking about going from fifth in your division or, you know, 10th in the conference up to 7th in the conference. Like, it just doesn't happen very often.
85% is 85%.
Right.
You're right.
It's something along those lines. It might be 88. It might be 82. It's a very high percentage of the time.
Well, I know how good you are at math, so I'll just take somewhere in the 80s and leave it at that.
At least I know how to record a podcast. So regardless,
there's nothing I could do but take that.
Right. So regardless, starting with 5 of your first 6 points is a big step. I know we keep talking about small sample size, and we keep talking about the fact that they haven't really proven a ton of anything yet. But they're
Dom. What do you think? What do you think the percentages of teams that make the playoffs who get five of their first 6 points are?
It's probably pretty decent. I know you're making fun of me, but it's probably pretty decent.
I'm sure it is pretty high.
So you're getting yourself set up in a good way. And we've talked about this team's slow starts for, it seems like, since Roger Nielsen was the coach. Like, this team has started slow forever. And we always...
Absolutely.
And we always talk about, you know, we have to play 10 games above 500 from December 1st on just to break the 500 shot. for the season. Yeah. So if you're starting above 500, if you're starting good, then that's less work you have to do later. And I know that sounds silly and obvious, but it seems like the team has finally figured it out. And starting strong like this, if you can get 3 more points over the last 2 Western Canada games, you come in getting points in, you know, all of your first 5 games and getting, you know, 8 of a possible 10 points.
A lot of that has to do with them committing to that, to the system, and committing to what AV is doing early on.
Right, exactly. And that, I think, is huge. And I think that I'm going to keep going back to it. I think getting the vets all those extra reps in the preseason is really coming through now. And you're preying on the vulnerabilities of teams that, you know, their star players didn't play much in the preseason. I think you saw it against Chicago, where Kane and Taves kind of had a mediocre game because they only played a couple of preseason games and were still getting their legs under them. The Devils played a decent game. Taylor Hall didn't look great. He looked fine. He had a couple chances. Jack Hughes, I don't get it. Still, you know, with a very small sample size, I still don't really get it. Either way, that Devils team didn't look like they were in midseason form. And the Flyers aren't quite there yet, but they look pretty good. They don't look like they're 3 games into the season.
And go back to Jack Hughes. Mike and I talked about it last weekend. Mike Jr. He's got an ugly number. 86 is so... It just doesn't look right.
Aesthetically, it's
yeah, it's just yeah.
89 is different.
You're right.
Wait, who are you talking about?
Jack Hughes, 86.
Oh, yeah. It's such a weird, it's awful.
Yeah. But obviously, it has nothing to do with his performance. I'm just, you know, throwing it out there.
He's a devil. We're allowed to nitpick him for small stuff. Right. It's fine. He's a division rival.
Feel good, play good. I don't know.
Right. But yeah, that Devils team didn't look like they were in midseason form, and the Flyers kind of did. And they just kind of outworked them all game. They won every battle, it seems like.
Yeah, this team competes way, way harder.
Exactly. And if you're punching above your weight class, you're going to go far in this league. And that's all you need. You know, you make it into the playoffs, and the Flyers can skate with anybody. I talked to Mike Jr. about this. The Flyers don't necessarily look like a top 5 dominant Stanley Cup favorite, blah, blah, blah kind of team. But they look like they can hang with anybody. They look like...
Yeah, their top end talent doesn't look as some other team's top end talent.
Not as dominant. I agree.
But they look on the ice so far, the first line, second line, third line play almost the same game. Or at least I'm anticipating the third line will look that way when Patrick returns.
Right. And
so that can go a long way.
For sure. And like I said, they look like they can take Tampa, Boston, Toronto, San Jose, Washington, any of these top tier teams. They look like they can stretch them to 6 or 7 games in a series.
Yeah. I left out the 5-0 Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, I'm aware. Turns out Connor McDavid's good at hockey.
So we go
it's
to
not McDavid that I'm worried about.
So we go to Calgary and then Edmonton, right?
Calgary Tuesday night, Johnny Gaudreau, right. Sean Monahan.
I think Elliott gets the start. And then
Vegas too, I think.
No. That's later.
They come here.
Right. October 19th, next Monday.
I think, yeah.
It's the 21st. That's my birthday. Okay. Hello. But yeah, they play Calgary. Thanks. You can tell me on next week's show when it's actually closer. They play in Calgary Tuesday night. I agree. I think Elliott should get that start.
And then, but I think more so because Carter Hart returns home to his hometown He's right outside of Edmonton.
Is it a back-to-back?
Yes.
It is a back-to-back.
Yeah, you got to play him one of those for no other reason, just to keep Elliott happy.
Right. Well, and
you, 2 or 3 days apart, I'm playing Hart.
And you give
three days for the rest of the season, Elliott would never play if it was me.
And you give Carter Hart the game in his hometown.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, near his hometown. And then Dallas, they return home to play Dallas on Saturday. So it's three pretty tough games this week. Calgary won the Western Conference last year. Edmonton's 5-0 and has Connor McDavid. Dallas made the second round of the playoffs last year and are clicking on all cylinders. They look like a good team this year. It's a testing week for the Flyers, for sure.
The best part about all of that is this time next week, we won't be using the words small sample sizes often.
No, not about half as much, because the sample size will be twice as large.
Exactly.
Well,
a better feel where we are this time next week.
I absolutely agree. And on that note, we are going to wrap up today's show. This is a reminder that you can find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify. I'm probably missing something. You can also follow the show at YWT Podcast, but if you search You Would Think anywhere, you'll find it. Now, before we get out of here, do you guys have any final thoughts? Mike, what do you think this week is going to look like?
I've talked over Dom for the last 45 minutes or so. Why don't I shut up and let him have the last word? Go ahead, Dom.
Okay. No final thoughts. Dom, final thoughts for the week.
My final thought, I actually have a fun fact for you guys that I just found. That
we have a fun fact.
Yes, that Travis Sanheim and myself share the exact same birthday. To the day.
Oh, same year, too?
To the day.
Same year as well.
Yes, March 29th, 1996.
That is a very nice fun fact.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now you just got to figure out who's older.
Right, but yeah. I was born at 10 after 8, at 8:10 a.m., I believe.
That's also Eastern Standard Time.
Right.
I definitely see you as the favorite.
Probably.
See what I talk about is math? Probably. There's 24 hours in a day. Don was born in the first 8 hours. He's a 2-to-1 favorite to be older.
Right. Well, you know, there's also time zones that... It's probably a little better than that because there's time zones at play. Travis Sanheim was born in Manitoba, which is at least one time zone over. Anyway... That'll do it for us this week. Dom, where can people find you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I am at Dom Console, DOMCONSOLE.
Okay, and that'll be it. Like I said, the show is at YWT Podcast. If you know by now, you know that Mike Sr. doesn't have Twitter. I also have it deleted. Mike is at Mike_Giletto if you want to tweet him. Suggest some guests that we can get on the show. If not, I'll be with these clowns at some point. I talked to Mike Sr. about this a little bit before the recording, but the Flyers play the next 14 Saturdays, so we're probably going to be recording on Sunday morning for quite a while.
Nice.
And until then, we'll see you guys next week.